Welcome to the Realtors Land Institute podcast, the voice of land, the industry's leading land real estate organization.
Today's guest is Wren Martin. Wren is a 25-year ranch broker with Fay Ranches in Steamboat Springs and principal and developer of Finger Rock Preserve, an Army Corps of Engineers EPA-approved wetland mitigation bank. Wren, thanks for being on today, man.
Yeah, appreciate it, Justin. I'm happy to do this.
Looking forward to educating our listeners on wetland mitigation and what it is and how it can benefit not only them, but also their clients.
Yeah, isn't it a mouthful?
Well, tell me about this. How did you get into wetland mitigation?
Well, I'll give you the shortest version I can, but I grew up in a cattle and citrus family in Florida, and in particular, wetland mitigation banking was really developed. The concept, the business model was developed in Florida for all obvious reasons, the amount of wetlands down there and the amount of development. We, in the citrus industry, we had a neighboring family also in the citrus industry in Martin County, Florida. And they're the ones who first told my father and I about this concept that you could build wetlands and that impactors of wetlands would come and possibly purchase these credits. It's a debit credit scenario. And so again, for example, a Department of Transportation that is expanding a particular highway and they're going to impact a wetland, they have a debit. And so wetlands are protected under the Clean Water Act, Section 404 of the Clean Water Act. And anytime you fill a wetland, you are required to offset that impact in the form of either building wetlands on site, restoring wetlands on site, restoring and or building wetlands off site as the permittee, or if there is a wetland mitigation bank available within that particular watershed, that permittee can purchase wetland credits. And so that's how I learned of this concept. I actually went to environmental school in Washington State. And when I started my real estate career here in Colorado, Northwest Colorado, I became aware of this site that was pretty much a pretty common piece of agricultural land. But it had a really strong portfolio of water rights and kind of thought, I wonder if this business, wetland mitigation banking, could work here on the western slope of Colorado. Long-winded way of kind of how that door got cracked open and I started fanning that kind of interest, if you will.
Well, I think that's awesome, man. You know, anytime you can find a niche in this industry, it's really going to obviously separate you from your competition, and you're a prime example of somebody that's done that quite successfully. So how many years would you say you've been specifically working in the wetland mitigation industry?
I acquired the property in 2001. It took about 20 months of going through the Army Corps of Engineers, the EPA, and then U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to get our wetland mitigation bank approval. And I think a lot in the ag industry will say, you know, what are the economics? Why did this make sense? And our site, which sits in South Rout County, south of the town of Yampa, is kind of evenly geographically, it's even between the Vail Valley and to the south, and to the north is Steamboat Springs. And so I could crunch those numbers. What does the ag look like? You know, it's what's the hay income look like for the amount of irrigated meadow that we have, and what does the grazing component look like? And really, I took this 620-acre site and started crunching some numbers on what potentially a wetland mitigation bank could look like. And that's, you know, and so that was kind of the first and foremost. Do I keep it historically ag as it has been, or do we look at another revenue stream for a 620-acre site? And so that's really what we did. We finally got, after a long 20 months, finally got our Army Corps of Engineers approval December of 2003, and we've been selling wetland credits ever since.
Man, that's great. Talk about, you know, highest and best use in this industry a lot. And that's something that I think a lot of people don't really think about, is the highest and best use for a property being a wetland mitigation bank.
It's an alternative to agriculture. And, you know, I can remember here, the town of Yampa is still very traditional ag. A lot of cow-calf operation. My neighbors or adjoining ranches are cow-calf and heavy on the hay side, production side. And they all thought I was crazy. You know, here I am, instead of going in and moving, getting rid of some sagebrush land and try and make it a higher forage area, I was, in essence, trying to act like a beaver and improving the hydrology on this site. Wetlands have to meet certain criteria to become what's called jurisdictional wetlands. Obviously, to meet that criteria within my banking development plan. And on a 620-acre site, I created a development plan, a wetland development plan on roughly 250 acres. And so since that summer of 2003, we've been raising that hydraulic component, planting wetland plants, put in a number of ponds for, you know, for drought scenarios, for water storage on site, so that I have a perpetual wetland scenario. And, you know, I wear that wetland farmer hat, rancher hat ever since then.
So that 250 acres, was all of that designated wetlands when you started working on this, or did you, you know, flood some of that to create more wetlands? Kind of walk me through that process.
Great question. So as I mentioned, 620 acre site with a strong portfolio of water rights. And that was key to this particular site. You know, looking at hydrology, looking at soils, looking at that, you know, in the West, looking at that, those water rights. The majority of our water rights are senior water rights pre-1895. In addition, the portfolio of water has two storage rights and two large off-site reservoirs here off of the Yampa River. And so analyzing all those components to come up with, do we feasibly think that we can grow wetlands on 250 acres? When I started, there were roughly 17 acres of jurisdictional wetlands. And that question is absolutely right. What existed when we first started? And that was 17 acres of really degraded wetlands. The place, the land had been overgrazed. The land had been leased by a neighboring rancher. He put his cows in there really in the winter months. And so all of that willow component, scrub shrub component was overgrazed and over impacted. And so we restored 17 acres of wetlands, and then we created the difference, getting to, we're somewhere around, though jurisdictionally, the paper plan called for 250. We're probably in that 245 range, something of that nature, since we've been at it for such a long period of time. What was amazing is really seeing how the land changed. You spread that water out, you care for that irrigation, and the waterfowl came back. you know, the riparian species just flocked to us. And today, we have Canadian goose nesting on site, sandhill cranes, a lot of mallards, teal, cinnamon teal. That's every, you know, I often have my hip boots on and wading through some of the irrigation practices. But every once in a while, I stand back and go, wow, it's significantly changed from what it originally was. So
that's awesome. Now, you know, selfish, kind of ignorant question here. Hearing you talk about all those waterfowl, what are the restrictions, if any, on hunting? Can you go hunt those wetlands, or can you lease them out to an outfitter to hunt, or is it strictly, you know, off, not an option?
So to answer your question, so a wetland mitigation banking, it's called a banking instrument. All of those rec items, you know, what you can and can do with the land is negotiated per site specific. Again, you know, if this is a mitigation site next to a subdivision, obviously those issues are going to be possibly restricted. On our particular site, yes, we retained the recreational attributes. And I bring a lot of youth in to hunt there. It's nice. Some pretty easy jump shooting. A lot of father sons. We open it up for some wounded warriors that have come in and fished it and hunted it. I keep the recreational side. From the Army Corps and the EPA standpoint, what's important to them is simply that it's protected in perpetuity. I never could develop the mitigation banking acreage. And interesting for this site, in 2011, we partnered with the Nature Conservancy and decided to conserve the entire 620-acre site. Again, each bank site is different, but this site here in South Rouse County, those are some of the intricacies of what our banking instrument and our long-term plans included. So
you put a conservation easement on the whole thing, but then you're still allowed to sell the credits to, I'll just make up an example here. Let's say a developer within that same watershed is going to do a new development, and he's going to, you know, eat up 10 acres of wetlands in his development. And that would probably turn off a whole lot of uneducated developers, probably turn off their realtors as well that may not know about this concept. So instead, you've got an educated developer, an educated agent that comes to you and says, okay, we need to offset these 10 acres. They then, do they buy credits for 10 acres from you?
Yeah. Simply put, when you have the Walmart that comes in and buys a 10 acre site to develop a Walmart and parking lot, et cetera, there may be, and in the West, as you're aware, our impacts are generally very small. Florida, huge swaths of wetlands being impacted by a highway expansion. In the West, we see a lot of small impacts. And so, for example, that Walmart comes in, 10 acre site, and as they are looking to entitle and develop their site, they hire a wetland biologist consultant, and he does a jurisdictional determination and finds that there's a 1 acre site of jurisdictional wetlands. As part of his application to the Army Corps, he says his preferred mitigation is utilizing the wetland mitigation bank that is within the service area for that particular Walmart. And it's often a watershed approach. For example, if you're impacting wetlands somewhere in that Colorado River watershed, you have to keep your mitigation within that particular watershed. And it's actually a hydrologic unit 8, HUC code 8, is generally the hydrologic mapping area of where you can feasibly do your mitigation. So in that Walmart scenario, Finger Rock Preserve is an alternative for him. And we offer a full release. That's the beauty of wetland mitigation banking. His permit number transfers to me. It's a complete transfer of liability. Walmart wants to be Walmart. They don't want to be in the wetland business and have to monitor their wetland mitigation site. When they come to a wetland mitigation bank, they get a full transfer of liability and they move on and develop their wetlands, or excuse me, move on and develop their Walmart. I absorb their mitigation requirements and I continue to grow the wetlands. There's okay. There's no real estate, real property transaction. The overall, you know, how many credits have Finger Rock sold is a debit credit accounting that the Army Corps and myself keep track of. You know, that permittee, that Walmart just wants to verify that their mitigation is complete. They can go on and fill that wetland and recognize a lot of these wetlands are already impacted, degraded because they're in the, you know, they're in the fort, in the development area. So they're not functioning like normal wetlands function. And as compared to a large habitat tract like we have at Finger Rock Preserve, you know, where those, our wetlands are functioning at a much higher level. So.
And can you eventually run out of available credits? I mean, in that theory, or that example you just gave, I'm going to say you've got 250 acres. The Walmart comes in, needs an acre worth of credit. Does that mean, okay, now you've got 249 available acres for future and developers?
Yep. Okay. It's, you can appreciate there, and within the Army Corps in the West, generally speaking, if you impact an acre, you have to mitigate for a minimum of 1 acre. A lot of times the Army Corps will apply a ratio. Some of it depends on the quality of the wetlands that are being impacted. But a lot of times it's, if you impact 1 acre of wetland, you have to mitigate for 1.5 acres of wetlands. So they buy 1.5 acres from us. Yes, that deduction comes off of our total available wetland credits available. And it, when we sell that last credit, we will close the bank. There will be no more credits available. And that site is maintained in perpetuity. Our particular scenario, and this is very common across the industry, across the U.S., many of these sites then get turned over to the public domain. They become outdoor education sites, open birding sites, bird watching sites for the public. And someday that'll happen at Finger Rock Preserve.
Okay. Well, that makes
sense. The Nature Conservancy, while they did not accept this responsibility, you know, back in 2011, there was discussion that when that last mitigation credit is sold, possibly TNC, the Nature Conservancy, will take over this site and turn it into outdoor education and continue to maintain the wetlands in perpetuity.
What's cool kind of hearing the timeline, the process and the history, because I've seen those, you know, projects and, you know, developments all over the place, but I've never really understood the whole concept of what all was involved to get it there. And when you said it took 20 months, I mean, this was a long time ago. I would imagine to go through the whole process now, it'd probably take, you know, 3 to 4 years. And so for somebody that wanted to get into this, I guess my question would be like, what size parcel do they need to be thinking of for a minimum? I mean, if there's 5 acres of wetlands, it probably doesn't make sense. But if there's a 50 acre parcel and there's 10 acres of wetlands with historic water rights where they could make that larger like you did, is that worth considering? Or what would you say is kind of the minimum acreage needed?
It all depends on the level of demand. For example, in high demand areas, you're seeing wetland mitigation banks that get permitted for 25 acres. Again, that bank will open and close in a quicker period of time, but obviously for the bank sponsor, the economics work. Here in the West, we see small impacts. And so I have a lot of clients. We've seen a lot of clients at Finger Rock Preserve, but again, our average impact size is something like a quarter of an acre, you know, 0.15 of an acre. So, so to answer your question, what I did, and this is probably probably germane to someone looking at a mitigation bank site. You FOIA how many impacts have been in a particular watershed area that you may obtain. You may be able to negotiate with the Corps, with the Army Corps of Engineers, and get a particular watershed area where you can sell credits. And then you look at historically how many impacts have they seen. You know, so what get some idea of what those economics look like and what the future may hold of how many credits you could possibly sell over X number of years. And so the economics need to work in order for, you know, for a sponsor to move forward with a mitigation site. I fully recognize that this mitigation bank, the economics are very similar to cow-calf and hay operations. And just like a, you know, a rancher in Route County, this mitigation bank is going to be here for a long period of time. Some years are better years than other years. But again, it depends on, you know, what those economics look like. And if you're close to an urban area with a lot of wetland impacts, a smaller site may be feasible. If you're, you know, out in more of the rural sector, a larger site and a longer time frame of selling wetland credits may be the best case scenario. So,
well, that makes sense. Supply and demand, like everything else in this industry, right?
Yeah, probably the only good news for real estate minded folks is you can appreciate if you're that Walmart and you have a 1 acre requirement, and let's say for conversation, your consultant convinces you to Walmart, you need to go and do your own wetland site. We can do this more cost effectively than Finger Rock Preserve. And I hear this all the time. Oh, your costs are high. Your credit costs are high. We're going to look at a permittee responsible mitigation site. In Colorado, it's very difficult to find a wet site. And generally speaking, the minimum acreage size you can find is 35 acres. Well, I've done my best to educate the Army Corps of Engineers that if it doesn't have senior water rights, pre-1922 compact water rights, that particular site's not worth much. So what's it cost for a 35 acre site with senior water? Those costs are significantly going up every single year. In addition, you and I both know it's very difficult, very challenging to find those sites. And a lot of times their consultant, the Walmart's consultant, will come back 30 days later and say, wow, you look really cost competitive as compared to permittee responsible wetland mitigation banking. But sometimes it just takes, you know, that level of education, if you will, for them to realize that what we offer is a real service in the industry.
Sure. Well, that's great. We definitely see clients of all sort, whether it's Army Corps of Engineers or developers or, you know, just investors that don't realize, you know, the deal in front of them until they learn the market a little bit more. And then they come crawling back saying, okay, you know, are you still willing and able?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, had a question for you regarding tax benefits or tax implications. You mentioned conservation easement, and that's another podcast in itself, you know, the benefits from that. But educate me, are there tax benefits that come as a result of wetland mitigation, or is it?
You know, I did a lot of work convincing our assessor, that Route County assessor, that what we are doing is ag. And they, when I first started this business in 2003, they thought this was more, you know, we could be assessed at a commercial rate. And I did a lot of work showing them that what we do is ag. And you know, you can appreciate 2003 to 2011, when I did the conservation easement, there were a lot of years where, you know, we were not conserved for agricultural conservation values. So to answer your question, you know, keeping the property at that ag tax status was very important, because what we are doing is ag. And then once we put that conservation easement, we you know, protected those ag values in perpetuity, and protected, you know, that ag classification in perpetuity. And then the conservation easement, you know, the way the IRS treats that charitable contribution is pretty well, pretty easily, you know, that information is available. And we took advantage of offsetting revenue for a period of time with that charitable contribution.
Great. Well, wrapping up here, man, do you have anything else before I get to my ending notes that you want to hit on?
You know, I think that for your question regarding, you know, for the real estate community and or landowners out there that may look at their land and say, wow, I've got some natural hydrology. I've got, if I'm in the West, I've got deeded water rights. There's so many good resources out there to assist with looking at, you know, doing the due diligence. Is your site a potential wetland mitigation bank? In addition to wetland mitigation banking, there's stream mitigation banking, there's endangered species banking. There's a lot of different credit debit scenarios that exist here in the US. And there's great, great consulting services out there that can assist with it. One of them is, you know, the National Ecosystem Banking Association. I've been a part of it for a long time, and a plethora of information out there. Anyone can always give me a call, and I can point them in the right direction if they think that their site may be suitable for one of these credit debit, you know, business scenarios.
Well, Ren, thank you so much for joining us today. I hope our listeners will use the information you provided to help their clients better navigate wetland mitigation and credits, and also get in touch with you directly if they'd like to learn more.
Perfect.
For more expertise on land real estate topics, be sure to check out the RLI blog, follow us on social media, and of course, tune in for upcoming episodes of the Voices of Land podcast.